It's a good song. You let it rock for a little bit. Rational Revolution, Mark Becker here. Got my friend Jeff Cubaservis, VP of Political Studies at the Niskanen Center. I appreciate your time, and I really thank you for your insight. And I think you can articulate some of these things so much better than most. So thank you.
No, thanks. It's great to talk to you, and I get a little bit of side of classic rock as well. R.I.P. Brad Delp.
Right on. So this is the long segment, if you will, and I wanted to have this discussion here. I was watching an interview recently where you talked about the Republican Party, and you said that you don't believe that Donald Trump has many true believers in the GOP. So if we're going to walk down the path of Trump loses, which I do hope happens, what then happens to the GOP?
Well, I suppose I need to clarify here. Donald Trump has an awful lot of followers out in this great land of ours who hang on every word he says and take every word as gospel. What I was referring to specifically was the Republican cohort in Congress.
Yeah.
Most of these people, let's be honest, grew up as Reaganite true believers. And, that was the crucible in which they were formed, and they met every one of the litmus tests that post-Reagan conservatives laid out for them. And Trump demanded that they reverse themselves on an awful lot of those points. Yeah. And you can run them down just as well as I can, from being free traders to being protectionists, from being internationalists to being xenophobes and restrictionists, from being accepting of people wanting to come to this great land of ours to keeping them out, and from being opposed to the Soviet Union and its expansionist designs to supporting Putin's incursion into Ukraine.
Sending COVID test kits during the pandemic.
Yeah, I mean, Ronald Reagan is, would be shocked and horrified, I think, by how many of his devotees have turned against the lessons that he tried to impress upon them. In their heart of hearts, most of these Republicans in Congress are willing to go along with Trump because the consequences of defying him and his followers are just too painful and maybe even dangerous. But do they really believe it? And if Trump's iron hand suddenly were to lift from the nape of their necks, might they do something else? Well, they might.
So my question is, how do you, as someone who's ran for office and helped out dozens of other candidates, how do you take back, kind of that whole country thing? Because we had a guy that is running for Reed Ribble's old seat. His name is Tony Weed. And there was a primary, and there was three people that were in it, a military veteran who was a state senator. He was up against a different state senator who's horribly unqualified. His name is Andre Jacques. There was one person who was so well qualified and would do a fantastic job, but he didn't win because the other guy that did win had Trump endorsed on the top of his yard sign. And no one knew who the hell this guy was, but he was Trump endorsed. So how does the GOP move from that and take the party back from that? You have to get through a primary first. How do they even do that? Is it possible? How do we modernize? How do we break from that stigma and get qualified good people through the primary process to be able to, put together and put out that moderate platform?
I mean, this is the $64,000 question mark. I honestly don't think real changes are coming to the GOP if Trump wins.
No. Yeah, no.
If Trump wins, then it's Trumpian populism.
It's the ball
from
game.
Now until the end of time, really. And furthermore, Trump is going to continue to be a very important player in the Republican Party no matter what happens. And the Trump endorsement may matter as more than anything else for a long time to come, as long as Trump is around. However, again, this is like really not the way that American politics has ever operated in the past.
No.
And a lot of it has to do with the way that, as I'm sure you know very well, that we've gerrymandered ourselves into a corner here.
Yeah.
But ultimately, there isn't really a distinctive way, Republican or Democrat, to do most of the work of government, to clear the roads, to keep the businesses running. It's really a case where it shouldn't matter that someone really hates Democrats more than the next candidate, and that's what you're going for in terms of their responsibilities. So, my hope is that Republicans can actually accept the good hand they've been dealt in the future, which is the country I believe is a center-right country.
Yes.
And there actually, you know, are a lot of the issues out there that work for Republicans. They are generally more trusted on issues of business and the economy. Americans are very upset about what seems to be an open border. That's an issue which they can use rationally to their mm-hmm. advantage, as long as they don't go too far yes. and talk about rounding up and deporting millions of people who are here using the National Guard in ways that would involve bloodshed and civil unrest. Mm-hmm. I think just being normal Republicans would usually be to the great advantage of people in most races. But again, the problem is they've got to get through the primary election. And what would be great to see, frankly, is if more of the normal Republicans, registered Republicans, would start voting in those primaries and would start actually asking people questions about how you intend to govern, not how do you intend to go on Fox News or OAN yeah. and raise the hair on the back of people's necks with your crazy statements, but how do you actually intend to govern and get things done?
Well, and it's, you know, you talk about the normal Republicans. Wisconsin is such a good petri dish for this. I mean, you look at someone like Reince Priebus, who he was a normal Republican. You know, when he was here as the chairman, and I met him, I know him, and I should say I knew him, because now what he has become is he has become, you know, the Kool-Aid drinker of Kool-Aid drinkers, and he hands out the Kool-Aid wherever he goes, and it's really dangerous stuff to drink.
Yeah. And you know, it comes across as inauthentic, too,
yes.
because everyone knows that's not who he is. This is just opportunism and, you know, kind of greed to advance for his own personal sake. He'll say anything to get ahead. That's not an attractive model, to be honest.
No, and we have our favorite governor, Tommy Thompson, was like that as well. You know, and I've known him, and he was very close last time around to not endorsing Donald Trump and to endorsing the other guy. And now we had him on the show, and he was talking about how we need to give Donald Trump a chance. And I asked him, I said, Governor, we did. And what? And, you know, we talked to Michael Steele. He doesn't think that the GOP survives this if Trump loses.
You know, in a two-party system, I think the GOP will always be around in some form or other. You know, the question is whether it can connect to the best parts of its heritage. I mean, it's worth mentioning to your audience that I'm still a registered Republican
in
Washington,
right.
D.C., for all the good that does me, you know. and you know, my apartment's virtually a shrine to great Republican leaders of the past. Not just Reagan, but, you know, especially Dwight Eisenhower.
Yes.
And, you know, I don't think Dwight Eisenhower is an obsolete model of a bygone Republican Party. I frankly think that we are in a Cold War with China, and that we need to actually look at 100%. The playbook that Dwight Eisenhower gave us in terms of how we compete effectively, and especially how we bring our allies along with us, because powerful as we are, we cannot do this without our allies. So, you know, I think the Republican Party needs to just get back to becoming the big tent party that Ronald Reagan wanted it to be, to a party that, you know, is probably going to be conservative, but also will actually better reflect the fact that it's moving toward being a working class party and a multi-ethnic, multi-racial working class party at that, one that potentially could have broad popular appeal, and a Republican Party that could actually win a popular vote in the presidential election, which it has not done for 7 out of the last 8 elections.
Yeah, it keeps tripping over
itself.
And it
would be much more, it would be much more popular if Donald Trump simply didn't amp up the bloodlust of his most devoted followers and could somehow or other tack back toward the center. Now, he's not capable of doing that, but the next Republican leader ought to be.
Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting. I'm talking with the Jeff Cubis Service here, VP of Political Studies for the Niskanen Center. There was a call, that a Zoom call that you guys did. I watched it on YouTube post the election last time around. And your colleague, Christy DePena, brilliantly said in that Zoom call, this was days after the election, that there has to be some sort of both parties in the moderate wing need to understand that they are no longer united by a common enemy. And so if Trump does lose, you know, I that's why I think, you know, maybe the GOP does stick around. But all of these people that are now branded with that MAGA hat, they got to go. You know, we have to do some sort of a, I don't want to say cleanse, but we have, you know, there has to be some sort of reckoning with what they did.
I guess I am hesitating a little bit in responding to that. I mean, you know, what tied the Republican Party together, what tied the conservative movement together, was the common enemy of the Soviet Union and yes. communism. Yep. And there's never been a kind of uniting force like that in the years since the wall fell and the Soviet Union dissolved. And, you know, for a while it looked like Islamic terrorism could provide that glue, but now it doesn't. And, you know, the glue, to the extent that there is one in the Republican Party right now, is a venomous hatred of half of America
right.
that votes Democrat.
Right.
And that's not ultimately a kind of motivating force that can lead to successful governing, because if you want to repress and destroy half the population, by definition, you are not interested in governing in the interest of the whole country. And, you know, the way I look at it is that there's some people who should not be allowed to become leaders. And, you know, leadership in government is a complicated technical business, and not everyone is good at it. And there are some people who actively damage our collective work of governing ourselves. Those people ought to be kept out of office. And if they're in office, they ought to be removed. But, you know, we all have to live with each other. Mm-hmm. And, you know, every member of my family is voting Trump. And I've got to live with my family, and I love my family. And in the end, I want to find common ground for us all. And I think that will be more possible once Donald Trump's unique and malign influence has declined in both the country and the nation as a whole.
You know, I've said this so many times. Where I am, I'm a fiscal conservative with a social conscience, and I think that's where the GOP ought to be, because there are conservative arguments for things like climate, and there are conservative arguments for things like letting women control what they do with their bodies and letting, you know, people who are gay marry the person that they love. If we can get over those things and get on to, you know, a strong national security, strong national defense, you know, closing the border. Yes, those are issues that the Republican Party would win on. And those are issues that could, like you said, win a popular vote. But we can't get out of our own way time after time after time.
Yeah, it's tough. And, you know, this is where Trump is actually not a very good coalition manager, to be honest, yeah. because... you know, the barstool conservatives do not see eye to eye with the evangelical Christians.
Right.
And you have a Republican Party, which even under Trump is not really united. It's a bunch of really oppositional factions and, you know, a Trump administration would just be a snake pit of competing egos and daggers in backs and poison in coffee, you know?
Yeah.
And in a curious way, you know, if Trump were a better manager, he would be more successful as a politician, and his administration likely would be more successful as well. But because he isn't, people are competing with team suggestions and possibilities from Project 2025 on downward yeah. for what Trump might want. And Trump himself doesn't know, so he can't adjudicate in a way that successful party leaders have done in the past.
You know, it's funny, and that's the exact thing that some of the Trumpy people say. Oh, he's a business guy. He knows how to lead, and he knows, you know, all this stuff. And yeah, it's wild. It's a crazy time. So we got 30 seconds left. What do you think is going to happen? That's the $1 million question. We had a $64,000 question. 30 seconds. What do you think is going to happen?
Ah, shoot. You know, we all gave up being Nostradamus in 2016. I got no idea.
You got no idea.
You know, I mean, America, whether you're a believer or not, has had very providential fortune
yes.
throughout its history. The right people have appeared at the right time to lead us through yeah. what seemed to be terrible moments. The 1930s was actually a much more dangerous situation, I think, than what we face now.
Yeah.
The 1970s, in their own way, in the late 60s, were much more chaotic, with families getting torn apart by these issues. I really hope that we will get through this moment as we have gone through dangerous moments in our national past.
Well, the one thing that I am grateful for is that we have people like you and the Niskanen Center guiding us through that as well. Jeff Kevaservice, thank you so very much for your time, and we should do this again soon.
Thank you, Mark. We should. Take care.
Thank you. You too. Thank you very much. We'll be back on the Rational Revolution with my thoughts.